The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, where we go back on some of the major stories that have made the headlines this week. And of course, at the beginning of the week, the big story was the deal struck by the EU with the United States that would impose from today a 15% tariff on practically everything leaving the EU and going to the US, and nothing placed on those goods coming the other way. Was it a good deal, or were we outbluffed by Donald Trump? Widespread starvation continues in Gaza, and with that, Prime Minister Mark Carney of Canada said that his country will recognise a Palestinian state in September with provisos. Ditto Sir Keir Starmer, whereas Macron has not, it appears, applied too many conditions to France's recognition of a Palestinian state. And of course, modular homes were back in the news with the proposal for exemptions for some sorts of developments, including the bed and the shed and the back garden. We'll talk about all of these things with Grace Boland, TD for Dublin Fingal West of Fine Gael, Lynn Boylan, MEP Dublin Sinn Féin, and Jennifer Bray, political editor with the Sunday Times. Good morning and welcome, one and all. So let's talk about the tariffs from today, Lynn.
Well, I suppose what most people are saying, at least the 15% gives some sort of certainty to business.
For the moment.
But I think today we were supposed to hear a written, you know, statement from the EU and the US. There's no sign of that yet.
I mean, they printed a list the other day, a kind of a statement of facts from the White House. And it was all about how great America was and how all the opportunities for American manufacturers pushing stuff into Europe, and then, you know, they were going to ease the sanitary inspections for food and all this sort of stuff.
Well, that for me is a huge red flag, because it's something that I've worked on for years in the European Parliament, and, you know, it's something that the EU is really strong on and should rightly protect its standards in food and agriculture, because it's the right thing to do in terms of public health, but also if we're expecting our farmers and our food producers to live up to this standard, then it is only fair that the products that are coming in, and that's not just between the US, we're looking at the Mercosur trade deal as well, where inferior products would be flooding the market. So in the interest of fairness for our food producers...
But there is no fairness in this deal, though, is there? Because, I mean, it was 0-0 on both sides. And I thought, you know, you've got to get stuff from Europe to the US or from the US to Europe, so you've got transport costs. But if you guys in America are so good, why don't you make the stuff? You know, why do you... You know, you're saying we'll have great opportunities for American stuff going into Europe. Why are you buying European stuff if you're so good at doing the devil and all?
Yeah, I think that trying to encourage industries to re-establish is going to be a difficult issue both for the EU and the US, because we have ceded that ground effectively to China and Asia decade ago. You know, they are our factories now and are producing the goods that we're all importing. So, I mean, we can have a whole conversation around that. I think it's very hard to attract businesses that have set down roots, are well established, to go back just on the basis of tariffs. I think it is interesting that, you know, why the EU doesn't seem to have used the leverage that it has. It's a massive trading partner. So I think there are questions around Ursula von der Leyen's leadership in it. But what we need to be doing from an Irish point of view is to absolutely be fighting tooth and nail to make sure that the spirits industry is excluded from the 15% tariffs.
Grace?
Yeah, look, we know with Trump, week to week, is not even in it with Trump. It's second to second. And what we have now is certainty. You know, our understanding from Ursula von der Leyen is that 15% is the ceiling. It is a framework agreement. There are more details to be worked out.
But I'm wondering, you know, you're an exporter from whatever country within the EU, and you're shoving stuff across the Atlantic, and you don't know at the moment, it's on the high seas, you don't know what they're going to charge you when you arrive. I mean, that's ridiculous.
And what von der Leyen is saying to us is 15% is the max. But what Ireland is doing, and what's really important, is that we have set up a tariffs response team to help our businesses who are exporting to the US. Antonisha Simon-Harris is meeting today with the Government Trade Forum to hear from businesses as to what they need, how we can support them, to take stock, to analyse the impact of what is happening, and to find out how we can do more to support our businesses, find new opportunities. And we've seen Minister Peter Burke, we've seen Minister Martin Hayden internationally on several trade missions this year. That is going to continue. Ireland has been fantastic at attracting foreign direct investment, at selling our products internationally, and we will continue to do that. Enterprise Ireland does it so well, and we will continue to support Enterprise Ireland to sell Ireland.
But I mean, the real crux here was that Europe was not united. There were all the different countries with their sectoral interests were banging on the drum, including Ireland, very noisily about not penalising the United States because we had so much to lose. And then we wonder why we didn't have a big stick to beat the United States with. The answer was disunity.
Look, we have the ceiling of 15%. Trump has come out again yesterday talking about penalising 67 countries internationally with tariffs from 10 to 41%. What we couldn't have, what we couldn't sustain was uncertainty. And we now have certainty. The instability and the changing rhetoric from second to second just was completely
unsustainable. I don't call that any kind of stability because he's still as mercurial as ever. Jennifer?
Yeah, I mean, look, what are the pros of the deal? You know, there's certainty around it. It's 15%. It avoids this kind of idea of a race to the bottom trade war, which in the end could be very damaging or even more damaging than the situation we have now. It also avoids these EU countermeasures, which would have harmed the Irish economy and also, of course, US consumers who will be hit. The cons of the deal, we actually don't know the cons of the deal yet because this is a framework of an agreement. We don't know the legal technical details yet. And they're really important for Ireland because where we are most exposed is around our Irish whiskey, our spirits, our agri-food, butter, dairy. And what we're waiting to see is what exactly is the tariff rate for dairy, for butter, because there's already a pre-existing rate per tonne. Is this stacked on top or is this separate? And secondly, will there be an exemption for spirits? There was zero for zero before. I've been talking to people during the week from the spirits industry and they are not optimistic about this and they're really, really, really worried. And the other areas I think where we're exposed, pharma, I'm hearing yes, exposed there, but that pharmaceutical businesses can change the way they work, whether it's intellectual property, whether it's reconstituting the formulas, whether it's changing the countries where they produce this. But medtech apparently is a real area of concern. So we have all these areas of massive exposure, huge companies where the workers there this morning are probably wondering, what about my job in a couple of weeks or months? So the cons of the deal, we still don't know. And I thought we might have some clarity on it today, but so far, no.
Now, the difficulty is, you know, having a trading partner in the United States that you can no longer trust. I mean, that's where we're at. And when you see, you know, the United States signs the Paris Accord, then backs out under Trump, then back in with Biden, then back out with Trump, pulling out of funding the WHO, abandoning UNRWA, all of those things. I mean, have we got to kind of look ourselves in the mirror and say, it's over with the United States? This great bromance between our two countries is over.
I think so. I think so. And I think that there is, that's a sinking reality, especially within government, that the geopolitical reality has completely shattered. And that actually how exposed we are is the problem. Things seem fine now, but if there is a shock, it won't be gradual. It will be very immediate. And we know that, you know, we have a budget coming up for budget 2026. The reality is governments have to set your budgetary policy 1 or 2 years in advance. So they need to recalibrate, I think. Now they announced a 9.4 billion euro package in summer economic statement. I will be very surprised if there isn't a move over the coming weeks and months to either make sure that that is the max or to tighten that up. You know, how can you justify a tax giveaway after years and years of tax cuts for workers and narrowing the tax base, including through a hospitality VAT cut, which is going to cost €1 billion? How can you justify doing that to the economy at a time when we are so exposed and dealing, like you said, with a trading partner like America, yeah, like someone like Trump?
The problem is this mixture of trade and politics. And Lynn, you probably saw that Trump has threatened Canada now because of its stance on Gaza. We're going to make a trade deal much more difficult. We see what Trump is doing with Brazil.
Exactly.
On the part. But I mean, this guy's standing up for Bolsonaro, for heaven's sake. I mean, it's crazy.
No, I mean, and that is why, like, you can't allow Donald Trump to bully the entire world to dictate what he wants. Do you know what I mean? Like, punishing an entire country because Bolsonaro was their former leader, do you know what I mean? And has now been taken to court, or punishing Canada for taking its sovereign position to recognise the state of Palestine. So that is the bullying tactic that he's using, and that's why I am kind of a little bit intrigued as to why the EU, with all of its leverage, did not push back a little bit stronger against Donald Trump. You know,
using trade in politics is not entirely new. I mean, we remember with South Africa and the apartheid regime and boycotting South African goods. So that
But I mean, I think this is one man, not like the policy of a country or where their geopolitical interest is. This is one man who takes a vendetta against certain individuals or certain issues and then punishes an entire region or an entire country on the back of that. Now, I kind of do think that there is going to be consequences in America as well. I mean, this doesn't come without pain for American customers as well. So, and he does only have 2 years, you know, 2.5 years left of his term. So for me, I would be very concerned to see if the government start to roll back on its commitments, particularly around investment in infrastructure, because we did that when the banking crash happened and we're now paying that price that we didn't invest in. Now, building our water infrastructure and our housing, and that crisis later.
But Grace, that point that Lynn is making is one that all the economists have been making during the week. The idea that they will have this splurgy budget and, you know, the money that's planned to be spent on the National Development Plan. And if things change dramatically under Trump with tariffs and all the rest, that then they will pull back on that investment. And they're saying, no, that's not what you do in a crisis. You actually invest when times are tight and you save your money when times are affluent, which they are at the moment.
In fairness, Minister Pascal Donoghue is very prudent. He is very keen to make sure that we invest properly and for now and for the future. It's a question I actually put to him. If international global circumstances make it very difficult for Ireland to put out the budget that we would ideally like to do, what will be the things that we will make sure we will absolutely invest in? And his answer was, we need to learn and we need to make sure that we do invest in
the
infrastructure.
They made the statement saying that they would actually cut down on this kind of investment if times go bad. And the idea is you prime the economy when things are bad. And then you start, you know, saving and putting rainy day funds in place when times are good.
Yeah, and look, we can't preempt the budget. We can't preempt what might come out today from Trump. We hopefully have more certainty, which will give our economy, our businesses, much more certainty. You know, foreign direct investment this year is up 37%. Our economy is in good shape, thanks to Pascal Donoghue. We are committed to investing in the infrastructure. And we will see that happen.
But we haven't seen it for years. That's the point. We haven't seen the grid infrastructure investment when we had the money. And now we're I think, 28% behind any other country that's of a similar economic status to Ireland in terms of our grid infrastructure. Yeah. We can't get houses connected to the grid. I mean, that's the situation that Pascal Donoghue and this government have stood over.
Jennifer?
Yeah, I think after they published the summer economic statement, the government said that if there was a worsening in the trade and tariff situation, they would recalibrate. And when they were kind of grilled a little bit further on it, the minister said we would implement a cut to current spending, but not capital spending. So the argument was that we will maintain kind of the infrastructural element.
So what's going to suffer?
Well, what's going to suffer?
HSE budget cut? Social welfare cut?
Every department. I mean, every department now is looking, going, how can we try and make a win out of the next budget on a very small increase? Possibly they won't. And the Minister for Finance will try to give them those wins, but they'll find it very difficult to secure them. But you're right. This is the question that never really gets asked in budget talks, is you're talking about these people who win. Well, who lost? Someone always loses. And in this case, I think a lot of people stand to lose. So a lot of it, I think what you'll see over the next couple of months, particularly in silly season for us political correspondents scooting around for stories, is ministers trying to manage expectations about what's coming.
As an interesting text here, and the tariffs will start actually on August the 7th. Sweet potatoes in a particular chain, all the way from the United States, and I'm not mentioning the chain because I don't know, I haven't seen this product on the shelves in that chain. Sweet potatoes, all the way from the USA, sprayed with a growth retardant. Mm-hmm. Disgrace. Is there a grow in Ireland at all for sweet potatoes? My one-year-old loves sweet potato, but I'm not going to give them American spuds.
Mm. And this is such an interesting thing as well, because as part of that deal between the EU and the US, there's a commitment to buy more American goods. Now, in fairness, a lot of that seems to be around military equipment. Mm-hmm. And the argument that's being made on the EU side is we won't have any watering down of our standards. But we still haven't seen the technical details of the deal. So can we actually say that?
But I mean, we've heard that as well with the Mercosur trade deal, and yet the deal actually says that there'll be less inspections, less auditing carried out. Do you know what I mean? So the devil will be in the detail.
In South America, as part of the Mercosur deal, they don't have the same level of scrutiny as we have in the EU. So even if the ambition is there to deliver the same quality of product, you can't be sure.
No, and they're actually committed to having less scrutiny in the Mercosur deal. So whatever small amount of products come in from the Mercosur countries now do not have the same standards. But now they're going to say there'll be even less testing, less auditing of those products coming in, but more of those products. So I think it is one definitely that I'll be paying attention to is around the food standards, because America also has very, very different food standards compared to the EU.
Now, Jennifer, we'll move to Gaza, because it continues to be hugely upsetting. But happily, and I'm cautious using that word, it is being observed as such by more Americans. Yeah. Ordinary Americans are seeing the images that they hadn't seen before. Ordinary Israelis are seeing images that they hadn't seen before. And that might point the way to some sort of progress towards a ceasefire.
Yeah, and I think you've seen a slight shift in Trump's language as well over the last couple of weeks. Not enough to go celebrating or anything like that. He's kind of, you know, I know he was asked during the week, I think it was by a journalist, you know, would you describe this as a genocide? And he said the situation there is terrible. I don't think that's something that he would have said before. Now, of course, he then went on to be typically Trump and said, we sent them X, you know, millions of aid and we didn't get a thank you. Not that I'm looking for a thank you, then why ask for a thank you? It's just outrageous when you...
The dying children of Gaza should say thank you, Mr. Trump. Come on.
But you know what's crazy is that now... It's the reality to read things like that and go, ah, yeah, that's Trump. Like, to me, I read that and say, that's insane. But that's an aside.
But the point is that the America, he says America coughed up 60 million. Proportionally speaking, per head of population, we have given much, much more in that area. But they're not looking for America to provide food. The world is ready to provide food. The United Nations is ready. The agencies are ready. The food is actually on standby in trucks. They're not saying to Donald Trump, write a check.
No. And actually, we've seen, you know, videos and images of all of those trucks lined up. And it's so distressing to think that it's right there within grasp of, you know, these. And it's really hard to talk about it without getting upset. But it's really hard to get upset when... Why are you getting upset? It's not our situation. It's not happening to us in this studio. But I think in terms of the politics of it, slight shift in American tone. What does that actually mean, though?
You've got Jewish organizations in America now being critical of the Israeli government. And we know with Mark Carney, although he has a number of caveats which apply to Hamas, and Keir Starmer has caveats that apply to Israel. Macron doesn't have the caveats. But that kind of movement within the G7, three powerful countries.
Yes.
Saying we're going to recognize
exactly
Palestine.
And are we seeing a situation now where America will become increasingly isolated in the context of the G7? If you have Canada, if you have France, and now we have the UK, and Keir Starmer was out this morning actually, and in recent days we've had these kind of top lawyers in the UK saying, you know, this is unlawful, and warning him, and he's come out this morning and said, I will go ahead with recognizing the state of Palestine or Palestinian statehood on the basis, if nothing changes effectively. And he's listed, I think, three conditions for that. And those conditions will not be met. So he will plough ahead with that. And I think from Irish perspective, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners of your show reading those headlines going, well, about time, you know, and I think it's something maybe that we did right, dare I say it, to move quickly on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, although not that quickly. Like, fair. It is fair to say, not taking away the credit that we did recognise the state of Palestine, but 140 countries have recognised the state of Palestine. Sweden recognised it years ago as well.
But
so
it's the problem of the interconnectedness of everything. I mean, the deal we were talking about, the trade deal, that's connected to Ukraine because they want US to stay on side with Ukraine. So all of these issues are interconnected. Gaza is connected as well. You know, that's the difficulty. It's like a chessboard with
It is, but it's a huge price that the EU particularly are paying in terms of the optics for their citizens and for their credibility on the world stage. And that's the point I make to the European Commission when it's talking about Palestine, because we're now seeing, like, on the streets of Berlin, protesters being beaten off the streets, women being dragged by their hair by the police just purely for exercising their right to protest. You know, you're seeing artists and academics losing their career because they dare speak out against genocide. So that's a huge sacrifice of EU, sort of what we've taken for granted. These freedoms are now being curtailed. Also, the credibility for the EU going out negotiating with any other country, particularly in the global south, who have taken a very different position on Palestine and have been the real leaders, the likes of South Africa and Latin America, that why would they respect any deal that the EU is going to negotiate with them when Israel can just tear it to shreds? So I think that the price that's been paid might take years to work its way out, but its credibility is on the floor, but with its own citizens and on the international stage.
Moving on to Grace, beds in the sheds in the back of the garden, coming at last to a garden near you.
So what we have is a public consultation that's going to last 4 weeks. And this is one that I've been contacted by many people in Skerries, Babregan, Rush and Lusk who are really welcoming this public consultation. They want to get on with it. They have grandmothers and grandfathers who are really integral to their family. They're helping out with childcare. Families want to support them as they get older. Loneliness is a real issue in old age. I have someone who has a disability and who wants to live close to the family unit.
So what's your take? You want this?
Well, I want people to engage with this. I really want to see people who are supportive of these measures, but also who have constructive feedback, engage with this. And it isn't just about modular homes. It's also really simple, practical measures like attic conversions, things that we can do to maximise people's properties and not clog up the planning system, alleviate pressure on the local authorities.
And you know there's a problem with attic. You know, you're not supposed to have a bedroom in the attic.
And that's the thing.
Yes, and it doesn't count if you're putting it up for sale.
Yeah. And these are the things we need to hear from people. We're giving them the opportunity to say, well, do we have to go through planning to have a bedroom in
like
the attic?
Like a styra is not good enough. You have to have a proper...
Oh, you have to have a proper
stairs.
And make sure you have your metal beams for the love of God. Yeah. Make sure it's
and
converted
also
properly.
Dormer windows. Like these are really practical measures.
So Jennifer, we heard about this last year and then suddenly it's back on the agenda with this consultation. What do you think?
Do you know what? I think it's interesting the level of debate that it generates, and I love hearing kind of both sides of it because there seems to be kind of an anger that comes out when people kind of saying this is not the solution. Mm. This is not the answer to the housing crisis. And I totally agree. But I don't think it's supposed to be.
No.
And I actually hate this phrase that politicians use where they say there is no silver bullet. But actually, like, kind of sometimes that's true. You can have various different measures that you bring out that don't have to solve everything in the one go. And who will this benefit, realistically? Who wants to move into a shed in the back of the garden? Let's think this out.
You've I know one particular family years ago, they put a shomer in the back garden. Not with the bathroom and toilet and all that. The kid who was studying was still able to use the family bathroom, but had a space, had privacy.
There's an office, or maybe you do have a younger person who's living in the house who would love that bit of independence.
Yeah.
My only question there is, if that's someone who wants to move out and these modular units cost between 55,000 to 75,000 euro, that's a deposit for a house. So would they not rather be...
Give them the deposit.
Give them the access to the housing. That's what they really want. They don't want to be walking through their mother's kitchen to go out, drive to work. That's what I'm saying.
Mm. But I think that's the issue. I mean, people are looking at older relatives, are looking at their kids going, yeah, that's fine. They'd get a bit of privacy. I think most would prefer to have their own home. Didn't mean particularly the younger people. But the issue is then who's going to, you know, exploit this system? Do you know what I mean? So renting out these properties for, exorbitant rents out the back garden, are you going to be accessing it through the main house if there's no side entrance? The fire safety issues. So I have a real concern.
But it will depend
it out on of the planning
the,
system.
Everything is about the regulation at the end of the day. I mean, if, for example, you have to come through the main house to get to it, no. Can't do it. If, for example, you have to have a family member living in it, not a stranger. In other words, no.
But who's
rental.
Going to police that? I mean, that's, we've seen it's very hard to police the private rental sector as it is.
Mrs. Nosy Parker next door is going to police it.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Yeah, and also the issue around planning and planning delays is we had short 500 planners within the local authority, so we could actually speed up the planning system, allow for people greater flexibility on this. But if we want to talk about modular homes, the key thing would be the state leading on the new build technologies. taking out the contract so that those factories that are across the country that have the technology to build these houses fast can scale up, but they need the state to take the leadership on that. So that's where I'd like to see the energy focused. But if we keep hearing about the planning system, we don't have the planners, we haven't resourced on Commission Planála to do their job, we don't have fixed times for decision making. All of that needs to happen as well. Otherwise, again, it's another sticking plaster put on, and who's going to be policing it and making sure that you're not having 10 people crammed into the back garden?
I mean, one of the things that there seems to be an appetite for housing rather than apartment living, because most of the apartments, no matter how well made they are not really fit for family living. You know, even new local authority housing near me in apartments, what's on the balcony? Bicycles, buggies.
Yeah. But that's,
you should have space within your four walls.
But again, back to reducing the standards for apartments again, which means that you won't have people living long term, and you're not building communities. You'll have young couples or workers sharing and then moving out. And what you want is to build communities, so you have to build for entire generations.
Grace?
So what Minister Cummins has suggested actually in this public consultation is that similar to properties where pubs are converted to residences, that they have to be notified to the local authority. Again, like an extension to the back of your house, you have to comply with building regulations when it comes to this. Your local authority will have a list, therefore, of all of these shomers in the back garden. You know, there is going to be oversight. It is an extension to your property.
Jennifer,
it is
last words to you today.
To your property.
I say go for it and let your neighbours police it for you and send notifications to the local
authority.
That's
the reality, isn't it? It will be the neighbours who will police it.
Think of the local authorities taking all these calls.
Okay, thank you very much, one and all, for joining us on a bank holiday weekend. Greatly appreciated. Grace Boland, TD, Dublin Fingal West of Fine Gael, Lynn Boylan, MEP for Dublin of Sinn Féin, and Jennifer Bray, political editor of the Sunday Times.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.